Welcome to the Faith Homestead Podcast, where we talk to you about God, family, homesteading, frugal living, and all the in-between. We're your hosts, Sarah
and Matt, and we thank you for joining us today. Please take a minute to subscribe, and we hope you stay a while.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Homestead Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Matt.
And thanks so much for joining us today. So it's been a crazy weekend so far, and we're going to talk to you today about transplanting seedlings and emergency happenings at a local grocery store. So if you guys could please like, share, and subscribe wherever you're listening. And if you're listening on YouTube today, please follow us. And if you are listening on your favorite podcast, please also subscribe. So today we're going to talk about the first thing we want to get out of the way is our pickle update. You know, we all are waiting for that, right? So last week, I decided that I was sick of paying grocery store prices, which was, you know, upwards of $5 a jar for my favorite cold brine pickles. And so I decided to make pickles, and we ended up making them for $1.92 per jar. And we tried them out after 24 hours. And what did you think after 24 hours?
They were still cucumbery.
But they were good, right? They had pickled, a good flavor.
Yeah, they had a really good, the brine with the dill and everything makes it was really good.
Yeah, it was really good. You know, it was a little bit, still, you could tell it was still like more in cucumber form, but it had really good flavor. Well, we are on jar number 3, and it's only been a week. So my daughter is super excited that she isn't being rationed pickles, because before they're so expensive. You know, she could truly eat like 3 or 4 pickles, if not more. We actually went through a phase with her that she would just keep eating bananas, and we had to like ration her. We were like, you cannot have more than 2 bananas, because she would just keep eating them and eating them. Well, that's how she ends up pickles. But now, at $1.92 per jar, they're affordable. And so she's been in bliss eating the pickles. And I would say now, we're not gonna open it because we already know what they taste like. We had some today, but this will be our 3rd jar that we'll be opening in a week. And so technically that we already spent, if we would have bought them at the store, it would have been almost $10, and we've only spent like close to $4. So that's just a great savings right there. But what do you think? What is your synopsis after a week?
So I love that crispiness to the pickles.
It's, yeah,
one of my favorite things in the cold brined varieties, mm-hmm. whether that's the jalapenos or the cucumbers, that you get that crisp snap to what you're eating, which is, it's really good. The flavoring yeah. on these are really solid. The vinegar's starting to soak in, absorb mm-hmm. a little bit more into the pickle, so it's,
yeah, I think it's really a little good. Bit, I think it's getting a little bit stronger, which I guess makes sense over time. Yeah. It's a little bit stronger, and I think I really like garlic. We're a family that just really loves garlic. I don't know if that's the Italian in me that's coming through, but we are just love garlic. And so I added a lot of garlic, and I think that I might back it off a smidgen next time. But it's still amazing. I mean, it's still fine, but I think I might just back it off like maybe 2 cloves next time, because it is very powerful, but it's delicious. And I'm so proud of this, you know, taking this skill and just doing it, because I'm never going to have to rely on the store for pickles again. And I actually just went and got a bunch of pickling cucumber seeds that we are going to direct sow. Come time for the direct sow, and we're gonna make that a huge crop this year, because while we are able and we're very, very lucky and blessed that we have a very awesome produce place near us, mm-hmm. it would be cooler to just, you know, grow our own pickles or grow our own cucumbers and make our own pickles. So I think it's gonna be really fun to play around with different types of brining and to maybe try doing a heat canning shelf-stable version, right. Looking into trying to get that pickle to be crispier for, you know, a longer period of time.
And I was excited to see what these would do over 4 or 6 weeks, but I don't think these are going to last
that long. I don't think so either. I think what we're going to have to do next time is make more so we can actually try it out. But it doesn't really matter, because it's good anyway, so I guess we don't really need to know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a week. It's been not even a full week, and we've already gone through 2 full jars, so hey, you know what? It's been a really nice treat for our kids. You know, our daughter Jocelyn is just very, very, very thrilled with them. So,
and I think for us, just the curiosity of, one, what was the taste initially, but then 2, did it change over time?
Yeah.
we snack on them probably more than we would have if we had to buy them at the
but
store.
But that's the and that's the beauty. We can, you know, it's more affordable now. So that's been really exciting for us. So that's kind of like, you know, on the pickle home front, that's kind of what's going on here this week. But something else that's going on now is that, you know, a few weeks back, if you look in our YouTube or podcast history, you will see our seed starting video that we did. And they germinated and they are coming out. We actually did something this year that kind of, you know, we kind of just used up all of our old seeds. Of course, we wanted to make sure we had what we needed. So of course, we planted newer seeds to, you know, at least cover our crop in case we didn't have a germination issue. We didn't have germination happening, but we really went through. You saw the huge box of seeds I have, and we were pulling seeds from 2018 on, and we had probably a 95% germination rate. Mm-hmm. We had a couple pepper varieties that maybe we got very little and limited quantities on, but those were. That's it. So I'm really happy to say that there is, you know, of course, as seeds age, there is a slower and a lower germination rate. But we were very, 2018, that's quite a number of years away. And we had a very, very successful germination process. But now it's been a few weeks later. So it is time to start transplanting, or also called repotting, many of our seedlings. And some people have no idea what that means. And so we're just going to go over it a little bit today. So a lot of people that are new gardeners, they're like, we're going to do seeds this year, and they get seeds and they plant them and they follow exactly the proper instructions to, you know, start their, mm-hmm. you know, seeds. And then the seeds come up, they germinate. It's very exciting. They're doing a great job. I mean, they were able to have things grow, but then they just leave it. And so what happens in a lot of the scenarios is, you know, you have seedlings that are fighting and some of them get choked out. That is a big problem. You have seedlings that, you know, are in this little cell and they need more nutrition. And so they don't ever get really nice and thick because they don't have the nutrients needed to be prolific in their growth. And so basically what we want to do today is I just want to mention to you kind of the do's and don'ts of seed planting and germination and seedlings. So you kind of have, you know, a leg up this year if you're new to doing this. And even if you're not new to doing it, it's always great to just, you know, hear what other people do and have a little bit of a refresher. So basically, what is transplanting? So transplanting seedlings is the act of taking a seed or multiple seedlings that have grown, that have germinated, and then removing them from their location and putting them in a bigger area and kind of burying the stem a little bit so they have, you know, more nutrition and they have that solid, you know, protection to then grow bigger. And so why do we do that? Well, there's a number of reasons why we do that. First of all, and the main thing is when you transplant, your seedlings are developing healthy roots. It is going to sustain growth, which is really important. And when do you do it? So basically for me, I usually, it really depends on your household and how busy or not busy you are. So this year, you're gonna see a video. We're gonna pan out in just a minute. But this year, you can see that in the video that you're gonna see in a minute is some of my seedlings were very leggy. And what leggy means is that they have come up and they are now competing for the artificial light that is around them. And so they're just growing and growing and growing. And so you have this like really, really long, you know, a stem and then a little tiny, you know, new leaves on top. And so what I did is I waited a little bit too long because I'm busy mom of three, but it's okay. It's really not a problem. And so I just, you know, I'm going to show you all that in the video today. So we're going to go to the video now. And then when we come back, I'm going to show you.
So today we are transplanting or repotting our seedlings and also learning how to trim down. So here you can see I'm working with cabbage and I let it get a little bit too crowded, but I am going to trim back the ones that I don't want anymore. And then from there, I'm going to put some more soil on here and then they will grow bigger and stronger. So that's what I'm doing here, as you can see. You can see here that I've put soil on top of them. They look wonderful. And then in about 4 more weeks, I will reevaluate them and see if they need to be put into larger containers, which is generally going to be the case here. So here you can see what they look like after I've put soil on top of them. They're looking beautiful. So the next thing we're going to do is we're going to work with some tomato. We have some beefsteak tomato plants. As you can see here, they are leggy. To the right, you can see that they are in a container and they are awful leggy. They are ready to be transplanted. So here you can see I'm just picking out the weak ones, the ones that I will not be using. And that's okay. That's why we plant a lot. These are actually from 2019. So some of them I just, you know, did not need. So there I am picking the ones I want to use. I'm adding new soil to the basket, to the little pot here. And in this one, I only did one because I thought that this one was going to, you know, need a lot more room quicker. So I'm only putting it in one. And then in this pot, you can see I'm doing two. And I just kind of bury the roots. It's totally fine. You just push them on down. Obviously, you need to be gentle, but just push them down. I use a 50-50 mix of potting soil and the seed starter, which is what I'm using here. And I'm just gently pushing them down, getting them stationary. Look how pretty that looks. So here I did this. I did this for about 150 seeds today. I got rid of, or you know, didn't. I discarded about 50, which went into our chicken bin for some extra nutrition for them. So I'm also upgrading them to another rack now because they are going to be taking up more space. This rack doesn't have a bottom that does not have holes, so I just put some paper just in case they get a little overwatered. Just be mindful when you're watering. And so here I'm doing more. Something that I will tell you is using a fork and spoon are actually like really great tools for transplanting. As you can see, you can really get in there and just be very gentle with the roots that way. So that's something that I find that's really helpful.
All right, guys, so now that we're back, you got to see, you know, some of the seed, you know, transplanting that I did. I really hope it was beneficial to you and you learned some, you know, new things. For those of you who, you know, skipped over the video, I'm just going to quick, you know, describe a little bit more of the process. So here, if you're listening on our podcast, I'll try to describe this the best I can for you. So basically, what I do is I used to buy like the peat moss pots that were 3-inch and 6-inch. But I've learned over a period of years that I transplant my seedlings so much that I ended up just buying plastic this year. And I'll reuse these plastic containers until they're, you know, not reusable. So basically I have a 3-inch pot in my hand, and in that pot I have 2 tomato seedlings. They are, they were transplanted, and they are, basically the stem is buried up and then you have about 1/2 inch coming out of the soil. You want to, when you pot, you want to try to pot them so they're 1/4 inch to 1/2 inch. So that way when they keep growing more, you can just add some more dirt into them. And then these will actually be moved to a bigger pot before they go in the garden. And so I do sell many of my plants to my friends and, you know, local friends and family. And so these 2 tomatoes will grow for the next, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks. And then they will be taken out, each of them, as long as they are both healthy, and they will each be put in their own 6-inch pot. And that they will stay in that 6-inch pot until they are sold and or they are planted in our garden. So that is the transplant process for me. And it is a long process, but it's something that gives me great joy. And I love the fruits of my labor. So, you know, come the end of the summer, we'll get to enjoy a lot of the produce and vegetables from this, yeah, which is really nice.
And the
nice
results that we have doing it that way with our garden every year, especially the tomatoes. I mean, our tomatoes seem to really do well.
Yeah.
Where we are and where we have our garden situated. So it's a process, but that process really does result in, mm-hmm, you know, the harvest time.
Yeah, and I think a couple of things I didn't mention in the video that you just watched is the things that you need. So we talked about seed starting and all the things that you need to get your seeds in the ground. But just so you know, and I will link this all in our Amazon store. This will not be linked in the seed starting album, but it'll be linked for today's podcast, okay? So you'll be able to have that, and you'll know the title. It'll be very obvious for you. But basically, you're going to need bigger pots. So like I showed you in the video, I was using 3-inch pots. So 3-inch pots are usually perfect for 2 seedlings. If you're really tight on space in your greenhouse, you can put 3 seedlings in a 3-inch pot. But just remember that you might have one that doesn't make it, as the others might choke it out. And then you will probably need to transplant to 6-inch pots sooner. The nice thing is you're like, well, what am I gonna do when I have all these pots? Because I have limited space. Like, you're in an apartment or you have a small greenhouse. Well, when you have to finally go to your big 6-inch pots, at that point, you're hardening off your plants. And so what that means is, by that point, your greenhouse and your setup should be outside, and your plants should be hardened off enough that they can handle the dipping temperatures. Of course, if you live in a climate where it's still dipping into the 30s, that's not a time to transfer your plants outside on your back patio. Your plants need to be able to handle 40s and high 30s, but you do not want to get below freezing or they will die. I usually put my plants outside around in May, and usually I don't ever let them get below 40 degrees. 40 degrees is pretty much like my end cap. And at 40 degrees, I'm even having them covered a little bit. So I'll keep them in my greenhouse and I'll zip my greenhouse down if I know that it's going to get a little bit cold. So that's just something for you to think about.
And do you have a recommendation as far as how many seeds to start thinking about, whether some aren't going to make it, or
that's like a great question.
That overcrowding, like, do you anticipate that when you start your seeds?
Yeah. So for us, because we have a very large, we're very lucky. We have a very large garden. I mean, it's not large compared to some viewers that are listening right now, but for us on our scale, it's a pretty large garden. So I don't really pay attention to my seeds, and I also sell them. I sell my seedlings. I mean, most people can go to their local Home Depot or garden center, and they can buy established plants that are ready to put in the ground. And usually they're between $3 and $6 a piece. Mm-hmm. I sell my plants. Normally last year and the year before was like $4 each, but I've upped it to $5 now, just because of the, you know, cost of all the things that I need to start my seeds. So basically, if you know, like, for example, that you have room for 10 tomato plants, I would start 20 seeds. That's what I would do. And then you can, you know, pick the strongest will survive. I mean, you will see if you're planting 20 tomato seeds, you're going to know when they start to come up, you're going to see ones that have a thicker stem. You're going to see ones that get their new leaves, but they end up getting their second set of new leaves sooner. Those are your winners. Those are your strong seeds, and you can keep them. You can also just keep the stragglers too if you don't want to get rid of them, and maybe you could sell them, because eventually they'll grow and they'll be good, but you know, you want the strongest ones for your own garden.
Yeah. And that selling of plants, I mean, that's something as simple as just post a picture on your social media account saying that you have them for sale. I mean, I was amazed how the first year when we did that, all of our plants were gone in
I already have orders. So I posted
a preview.
I posted a preview that I was gonna, you know, have plants for sale, but I don't post pictures until I actually have pictures of adequate plants to post. Like, I won't just post empty seed starting trays. Like, that's a little silly. But I already have orders for people that have bought my plants in the past. They know how good of a quality, how much care I put into my plants. And, you know, I probably started, let's just say, 150 tomato plants this year, and today only I threw away 50. Like, I pulled 50 seeds that were just like not up to my standard of what they should look like at this level of germination process. And you know, when I first started doing seeds, I was like, oh man, all that work, and I'm just throwing them in the trash. But they actually went into the chicken bin, so they didn't get actually put in the trash. So they will provide some nutrition to our chickens. But I did, I pulled about 50, because there was just 50 that just weren't that great. And so the rest of them, I gave them more space. I put them in pots. And even, like this pot I have here, if you can't see on the podcast, I have a 3-inch pot with 2 tomato plants in it. If one of these aren't up to what I feel is a standard in 3 weeks, then it'll go, and I won't transplant it into a 6-inch pot.
Right.
So that's just an example of that. But for the soil, when you're transplanting, you want to do a 50% mix of your seed starting mix and then a 50% potting soil. If you don't have potting soil and you still have a ton of seed starting mix, that's also fine. You're just going to want to add a little bit more water and stir it more so it's not as fluffy, because when you transplant, you want it to have a little bit more of a foundation than when you first started your seeds.
Yeah.
So basically, another topic that we want to talk to you about today is bamboo. We have an invasive bamboo problem at our house that we have been to no avail trying to tackle for the past 8 years. And Matt did such a wonderful job the last couple weeks cutting it down. So do you want to just talk about why you should never plant bamboo?
Bamboo has a lot of excellent uses, just not in our backyard. From the bushcraft side of things, from that survival in the woods side of things, bamboo is an extremely useful plant.
Sure.
And you should look it up and study that if you care to. Where I'm going with it today is it's been the bane of my existence for several years. And partially my own fault. I let the bamboo get further and further out of control. Other projects, the roof on the garage had to be done one summer. Other things just took precedence. The young kids, being able to be out there in the yard and spending hours making sure that the bamboo doesn't cross over the fence line, made it more challenging. So it took over pretty quick, and we lost about, I'd say from our fence or from our, from our fence line, probably somewhere in the ballpark of 15 to 20 feet of our yard.
Yeah, our yard looks so much bigger now.
20 feet.
It's crazy. And another thing too is like, you know, and it's nobody's fault. You know, bamboo gets planted. People don't know, you know, what bamboo can do.
And we've heard all kinds of stories that it can't climb hills.
Yeah, and it crossed over into our property from another family. But I mean, it's just if you don't have the ability or the resources to take care of it, it is just the craziest. It is the most, it is like a power plant. I mean, Matt cuts it down so it can't like get into our yard really far into like the center of our yard. But like if Matt doesn't mow the lawn for like 2 weeks, like when we're like super busy, you'll see like sprouts that are coming up like 50 feet away from like other plants. Yeah. It is unbelievable. So
it's tearing apart the yard. It's becoming, we needed to get a handle on it. We can't lose that much of our backyard. So
no, we need it for homesteading.
It's a project that I started out, you know, cutting it down with chainsaws and was just dulling the crap out of chains.
We were putting poison into the shoots. Like we were doing so many
things. I took my saws all out there. And I said, I'm just going to cut it all down. I'll figure out everything else later. Cut it all down.
We thought about meat chickens, honestly, to clear some of the land for us.
And we may still
be tossing it around.
I'm really close to getting back down to the corner of the yard again and then trying to reestablish a compost pile, trying to use all of the resources that most people don't think of as resources.
Yeah.
But you know, the chicken manure, all these different things that we have, the wood ash from the wood stove, all these things that I want to reuse in our own ecosystem.
Absolutely, especially the wood ash.
On our tiny little homestead, you know, that's the way that we are going to have success.
And just so you know, I don't know if we've ever mentioned this, but if you have a wood-burning stove, chickens, like, they love to dust bathe in wood ash, and it is like the number one preventative for like mites and bugs like in their feathers. So tomorrow we're actually going to be cleaning our chicken coop. I have a woman coming over from church because she just got chickens and she wants to go through the whole process of how I clean our coop, and so I'm going to show her that. And like they also have a wood burning stove, and so it is like whenever I do a major coop clean out, which is 4 times a year with each season, I put bags and bags of wood ash in there, and they love it. They flip around like they do somersaults in it. It's really cute to watch.
Yeah. And so the bamboo has been, I'm going to talk about an exercise, you know. It's been a project, but something that I did not feel like tackling. Sarah ran some errands this morning, and so didn't get to really get started on it until this afternoon, and you know, the energy level was not there to do it, but just knew, you know, I'd rather get a little bit done today and at least have less to do the next time I get to it. So
yeah,
got a lot of it actually cleared out. So probably down to the last, I don't know, 10 or 15 feet up the the fence line from the corner. So
yeah, and that's great. And like, you're, you know, that actually segues into what happened to me today while we were out, while I was out shopping. Kind of goes into our Self-Reliance Sunday, which we're gonna, you know, kind of close up here and talk about. But you know, I wasn't even gonna talk about this because I really feel that it's important to, you know, especially the Lord leads us to, you know, to do and to not boast, to, you know, talk about things, to not to have actions, but then to, you know, we don't need to be broadcasting the things that we do and, you know, the mighty things that we do and, you know, the exciting things that we do. We're really just supposed to help people and serve people and then just, you know, be quiet and have it between you and the Lord. But I really feel like this kind of goes into our Self-Reliance Sunday, and Matt said that he thought that it was okay that I shared this. And so because he agrees, I'm going to share it. And I'm not going to, you know, reveal any identifying information, of course, but I was at the store today because I, you know, you guys all know that I follow sale ads. I was running around to multiple stores getting the things that we need because we are on a budget and multiple stores had multiple sales. And so that's what I did. I got to my third destination and I was almost ready to check out, and there was a code blue that came over the speaker in the store that I was in. And if you're a medical professional, you know that a code blue is universal for, you know, a medical emergency. And I, you know, pushed my card up to the customer service desk, asked where the code blue was. They directed me to run out front, left my cart there. I ran out front, and a woman, probably in her late 60s, had went to step up onto the curb to like then enter the store and fell down. And there were two store associates with her, but nobody had medical experience. They have some training for what to do in the situation. They were absolutely doing their job. The one associate was with the woman. The other associate was on the phone with 911, directing them to where to go. And I let them know that I was a nurse, a registered nurse, and I then started, you know, doing what I needed to do to, you know, to establish orientation of this individual. And so, of course, I'm asking them, the person, you know, I'm going to ask you a few questions. Can you tell me, want to see, like, where does it hurt? Like, does your neck hurt? Does your head hurt? She was on her back. She was half on the curb, half off the curb. I did not see any visible blood, but she was telling me that her arm was like, it was definitely broken. Nothing else was bothering her. So then I went into orientation. Ma'am, can you please tell me what year it is? Can you tell me who the president is? Can you tell me where you are? And she was fine. She was alert and oriented times four. There was no issue there. At that point, I was then just, you know, gently touching her in different locations to see if there was any pain response. No pain response, just her arm that she was like telling me that she knew was broken. Another associate came out and they had a blanket, I guess maybe from a stock room, and they had wrapped her in a blanket. We were waiting for the ambulance, which felt like forever. I would assume it was probably about 8 minutes, which to me in response time, I mean, where we live, it's not rural, but it's not super busy either. And I guess it just took them a little bit longer to respond. Again, about 5 minutes after the initial orientation that I asked her again. This time she did know that it was 2023. She could not tell me the president. She could tell me her name. She could not tell me where she was. The ambulance then arrived. And of course I did not have a neck, you know, guard or anything for her. So I wasn't moving her in any capacity at all. The EMT arrives. I, you know, gave report to them. They were able to sit her up and wrap her neck. At that moment, we did see blood and she had injured her head. And at that point, this was now about 4 minutes later, she did not even know what had happened. So there was definitely, you know, definitely a head injury there. And so this just makes me think of a couple things. I'm very thankful that I'm a nurse and that I have this training. I was able to be in that store at that time and I was able to respond because it is my duty to respond. I did not hesitate. I heard the code blue. I made my way to the front of the store. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. That was what I did. Like, I didn't even think twice about it. However, if other people in that store had some medical training, whether that is just first aid and CPR, someone else may have been able to respond. But I was the only one in a filled grocery store on a Saturday that was able to respond. And so that just kind of goes into the Self-Reliance Sunday, if you want to take over.
Yeah, absolutely. And we discussed this a little bit last week, training. Mm-hmm. all of the stuff that we have, it does not matter if we don't have training. Now, I'm not saying that everyone needs to go out and have a bachelor's degree in nursing.
No, of course not.
But there are plenty of great training programs for providing emergency care.
I'm very thankful I was there.
Had you not been there, they could have sat that lady up because she seemed with it and obviously had a head injury.
Yeah.
They could have caused some major medical conditions.
Not only that, but my biggest thing that I was thinking about is that I had kept asking her, or I had kept asking orientation questions from the moment I saw her. So I was able to tell them within 8 minutes she has gone from here to here. And so they knew immediately when they got into that ER that she needed to go right in to have scans done. Because I was able to give them a baseline of where we started and where we were when they arrived. And that was something that I don't know that they would have been able to, they would have known when they got there that she was now confused, right. But they didn't, they wouldn't have known that maybe she has dementia, maybe she's an elderly woman and this is her baseline, but that wasn't her baseline. Her baseline was she knew exactly what had happened and who she was and all the things before. So I'm really just thankful that I was there.
Yeah. And I think that it's essential for us as self-reliant, as prepared people, we need to be prepared,
mm-hmm.
whether that is, you know, extensive training or gaining some knowledge, right? You know, just understanding CPR, basic first aid, is something that everybody should have. And almost nobody has it anymore. We actually at work had struggled to get a CPR class set up because they had a hard time having enough people in our area to get the CPR training out there since it's been handled. But, you know, it's just one of those things where the training that we have really does matter, and it can be the difference, right? It could have been the difference today for that lady that you helped being hurt or hurt worse than what she was.
Yeah.
And if had you not been there, right, who knows what could have happened. We can't rely on somebody else coming to be the one that helps us or rescues us,
mm-hmm.
right? And so having that training, you know, I think that having all of the firearms training, all those things are all important. But I think that training in first aid and understanding emergency response is something that's extremely important as well.
Yeah. I just, you know, I got in my car after I checked out, and also they were so nice. I went back to get my cart. And the woman at the customer service desk was like, almost like had tears on her. She's like, thank you so much for responding. Like nobody else responded. I'm like, well, there might not have been anybody with medical training. And she's like, we just thank you so much. And she ended up giving me a gift card. And I was like, I am not accepting this. Like, you're not paying me for something that I was called to do. And they were pushing me out. Like, they're like, take it, please. And it was just so nice. And I went in and they had given me a $25 gift card, and I was able to, you know, I was really thankful for that. And then I just got in my car and I prayed for her. So if you're listening today, if you could just pray for that woman, I'm not going to give you her name, but if you could just pray for the situation, I would greatly appreciate it. I hope that she is in good hands and that the Lord, you know, takes care of her. So we hope you guys have a wonderful weekend.